Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Johnny T-Shirt, always that best place to get your Carolina gear. And if you're going to get Carolina football gear, you need to do it, because Carolina football season starts in a little over a month against South Carolina and Charlotte. I've got Buck Sanders with me today on this podcast, and I've also got Mike Ingersoll. Mike, it's been a while since we've talked, man. What's been going on?
Not the man. It's good to hear from you. Good to talk with you again. I'm glad you guys had me on tonight. Usually I'm on with Siegley, especially during the season, but it's nice to switch it up a little bit and talk to you guys.
Yeah, you're on with the A-team tonight. No offense, John, but Mike, let me ask you this, and since I haven't talked to you in a while, and I want Buck to chime in as well, your thoughts on how this offseason for Carolina football has gone. Certainly, it could be worse. It could be a lot worse. But your thoughts on Mack Brown, everything that's gone on since he was hired as we head into preseason camp?
Well, it started off what seemed like was going to be a little rocky with some of his hires, and then all of a sudden he immediately flipped it on its ear and turned into one of the best coaching staff assemblages in college football this year. So it started off looking like it was going to be bad, and he turned that around, and then all of a sudden, you know, recruiting looked like it wasn't going to go so great, and then he started turning that around. Had some ups and downs in recruiting, but overall, I'd give it, you know, we ended up in the black, if you want to think of it that way. We ended up in the black with recruiting. We're not in the red. Things went well, and we got some kids that I didn't expect us to get. We missed on some kids I didn't expect us to miss on, but again, overall, I'd say it was positive. And then the general buzz around the program, it's back. Now, I saw today that season tickets have sold out. At least that's the message that we're getting from the school, which means that if they're not 100% sold out, then they're pretty close to sold out, which is one heck of an improvement from years past. So there's fan excitement. There's certainly player excitement. If you follow any of the guys on Twitter or any of their online presences, you see that there's genuine excitement from the players. And I've said this on podcasts recently. I think the last podcast that EJ and John and I did, you know, player excitement will get you, you know, player enthusiasm, you know, in the first year of a new coaching hire will get you one or two wins against people you probably shouldn't beat. So, you know, it's encouraging to see the fans' reaction to it, but really it's even more encouraging to see the players' reaction to Mack and what he's doing and what he's bringing to the table. You know, they're the ones in the meeting rooms, they're the ones on the practice field. So they definitely see something that's worth being excited about. And I think that should carry some weight with the fan base.
Indeed. We got a lot we can talk about on the show, but Buck, let me bring you in here and let's talk about fan excitement versus the media predictions. And it's always funny when people get twerked up over media votes, especially in the preseason. The All-ACC football team is basically loaded as Clemson's team, and I think rightfully so until somebody proves otherwise. But Carolina picked down at the bottom of the Coastal, or 6th out of 7th on the Coastal. You had a column earlier in the week about it. I just don't think it's that big a deal for me personally to see a team that I follow rank low, because I think you always want to start low and end up higher rather than be picked high and end up low. But your thoughts overall on not necessarily that selection, but how that selection maybe has sort of galvanized the fan base maybe going into preseason camp?
Yeah, Tommy, I don't know about galvanizing the fan base, but here's a couple of things about preseason polls that, you know, I think about. And one is, you know, most people will say, well, they don't matter. You know, it's just going to depend on what happens on the field. And to a great extent, that's true. But it's also about program perception. So, you know, when you're picked that low, it's easy to get a chip on your shoulder, whether you're a fan or whether you're a member of the team. You sort of feel like, wait a second, we shouldn't be picked this low. Why we picked lower than Duke? All sorts of things come into play when you think about whether or not you should pay attention to these polls. But, you know, I do think they matter. I don't think they matter. You know, it's not worth, you know, cutting your wrists over. But at the same time, the fact that North Carolina was picked that low, I can see how that might rile up the fan base. Now, on the other side of that equation, this is a team that's won 5 games in the last 2 years. But, you know, a lot of things go into fans' expectations. Some people would rather be picked higher so that, you know, it draws attention to the program. Pundits are talking about it, like Clemson. Would Clemson really rather be picked 6th in the Atlantic Division? No, because they want people talking about them. They want people focused on them. They want that attention, and they're entitled to it. So, you know, you can spin that a couple of different ways. You can say, well, I like low expectations so we can exceed them, but that's kind of a game we all play, you know, depending on where our team is picked and that sort of thing. It's not meaningless. It's not going to decide any games on the field, but it does have a factor to play in fans' expectations and how a team is treated by the media during the year and the attention that team gets.
Certainly matters the way the college football polls are set up, where you start out in the first, you know, I guess the first college football playoff poll or whatever. You want to be as high as possible in that. But Mike, as a player, as a former player, did it matter where you guys were picked going into a season? Do players pay attention to that at all?
A little bit. I mean, we notice it. It's all a matter of how you react to it. You know, we understood that it's like Buck just said. I mean, things will play themselves out on the field. And as much as you want to say that these preseason rankings are based on data and analytics and people that actually know what they're talking about, you can never really predict how a team is going to react to the first game of the season and the second game of the season, how they're going to react to winning a few games or even losing a few games. There's surprises every year. I mean, nobody expected UConn in 2008 with Donald Brown to be 5-0, 6-0, whatever they were at one point. You know, no one expected them to be any good. It was surprising that Rutgers back in 2006 was undefeated going into the Louisville game, and it looked like one of them could be playing for the BCS National Championship. I mean, that was unexpected. So you never know what these preseason rankings, how they're really going to shake out. But from a player's perspective, yeah, I mean, we notice it. And it's a kick to the gut, especially when, you know, in Chapel Hill, you're in sort of an echo chamber, right? So when there's a lot of buzz around the program, because I've been in the situation where there's been a lot of buzz and where there hasn't been any buzz. And when there's a lot of buzz, you know, you get kind of hyped up and you start believing the BS and you start thinking, yeah, we're something, people are noticing. And then, you know, rankings come out, preseason rankings come out, and you're lower than you expected to be. And you realize that, the people who are talking about us are just right here in our immediate vicinity. People who are noticing us are just noticing us positively or just in our immediate vicinity. The bigger picture, the national perception, like Buck was talking about, isn't exactly where we've been told it is. So it's a little kick to the gut. It's an ego shot, but again, ultimately, things never really shake out the way you think they're going to from a preseason ranking standpoint. Again, teams are going to respond to a couple of wins or a couple of losses in different ways, and you have no idea what kind of team you have until, you know, you face that situation early on in the season. So,
Buck, you know, I don't know if I would care as a player. I've never been there. Certainly you want people talking about you. But one thing I find interesting on the Inside Carolina message boards, and it's not some people, it's not certainly not everybody, but there are a few that think that Carolina is being wronged for whatever reason by the local media or the ACC media by being ranked so low. And I could be blowing it out of proportion a little bit, but realistically, the team won 5 games. And realistically, most of the media people that do this stuff for a living, most, not all, certainly not the ones that follow, that work for Inside Carolina for sure, but most base their decisions off of that. Like we've talked about before, recency bias. So my question, Buck, in a roundabout way is, if you were ranking this team, if you were one of those ACC members, media members that voted on this poll, where would you put Carolina in your preseason poll?
Well, you're not going to trap me off that easy. No, I'm not. I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. So, you know, a sixth place team in the Coastal Division, there's been plenty of sixth place teams in the Coastal Division that, or in the Atlantic Division, that over the last 10 years have gone on to bowl games. So, you know, in terms of whether or not a sixth place finish prediction knocks you out of a bowl game, that's not necessarily true. And to my, in my opinion, making a bowl this year is a successful year for the UNC football team. A really good year for North Carolina is to get to a bowl. Anything other than that, you can talk about sixth place, fourth place, fifth place, whatever you want to talk about. I think that that should be the like the benchmark. Get to a bowl. Now, as far as local media and ACC media, honestly, most of those guys, most of the local media and ACC media, they're not going down into the, you know, weeds and figuring out, oh, we've got this many returning starters and they were this caliber of a player and we've looked at the transfer portal and we know who's coming in, who's leaving. We know what this loss is going to mean in terms of personnel and what that loss is going to mean in personnel and have figured out, well, there's coaching changes. What's that? That they don't do that. That's not the average beat writer's task is to figure all of that out. What they're doing is they're looking at national publications. They'll look at, you know, Athlon. They'll look at Lindy. They'll look at Street and Smith. They'll look at Field Steel. They look at all these national magazines, which rank teams by, you know, in their division and in their conference, and they're going to pull out, they're not going to deviate dramatically from what the national people are saying, because a lot of those national folks, and you got to throw ESPN's Football Power Index into the equation, Bill Connelly's S&P Plus projections, all of that. You know, you can look at those and, you know, shuffle a card here or there, and that's how it's going to come out at the ACC media. You know, they're going to look at those projections, and that's they're going to take their cues from people that kind of do this for a living year-round. So it's not the ACC local media or not the local media, not the ACC media that is downgrading UNC in this instance, is that the local media, ACC media, take their cues from people that, you know, are kind of on the cutting edge or, you know, sort of do this under a magnifying glass year round, and then they vote accordingly. And from that, if you're using that data, then sure, you should pick UNC sixth. Because that's what all the data is telling you. Is the data right? We'll see. But it's not a local media or ACC media bias, in my opinion, that has put UNC where they are in these predictions.
I'm going to ask Mike same question, but first I'm going to talk about JohnnyT-Shirt.com. We talked about him at the opening of the podcast. They, of course, Inside Carolina podcast sponsor. They're also a great place for any Carolina fan to buy their Carolina gear, Franklin Street or online, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. go in store, great customer service, deal with them online, great customer service, anything you could possibly want Carolina related, certainly plenty of Carolina football swag. The Mac is back t-shirt, still a popular item, johnnytshirt.com. And if you're an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber, you get 10% off your order, either online or in store, and you can't beat it. And I'm sure that many of you need some more Carolina stuff. Call them up, visit them online, or visit them on Franklin Street. They're alumni, locally owned and alumni operated. They know what you need. They know what they can get you, and you will be satisfied with your Carolina gear from Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. Mike Ingersoll, I'm going to ask you the same question, and then I want to move deeper into the podcast. But if you were picking the preseason polls for this Carolina team, A, where would you put them? And B, since I don't think I've asked you this summer, what is your expectations, or what do you think would be a positive year for North Carolina?
I'd put them exactly where they are because they won 5 games over the past 2 years and nothing's really changed from a roster standpoint and from those past 2 years, except for the coaching staff. And we don't know what this coaching staff, as it's compiled, is going to actually pull off. So, I mean, I'd have them right where they are because I don't have any evidence to the contrary, or at least evidence that would make me think that they should be ranked any higher than that. I don't think that they are the worst team in the division, so I wouldn't have them dead last. But I also don't think they're much better than, you know, scraping the bottom until they prove me wrong. And the reason, you know, another reason I'd put them that low is because, you know, there is a big element of the unknown here. And if you rank someone, rank a team low like that, you know that they only have, you know, they only have upside, right? So all they can do is surprise you. They can't possibly disappoint you at this point. So if I'm a, you know, a beat writer, and I'm in charge of picking, you know, doing preseason rankings in the ACC, I'd put Carolina right where they are and hope that they surprise me. Now, part B, your question was, you know, what's a good season for them? Buck hit the nail on the head when he said it's a bowl game, right? Would be an absolutely spectacular turnaround for this year. You know, we're looking at potentially a freshman quarterback. We're looking at a true freshman quarterback. So not a red shirt, not a kid with a couple of starts under his belt that kept his red shirt. We're talking about a true freshman quarterback that's never played college football before. We might have that situation. We got a bunch of new guys across the board. We have some transfers that I believe a couple can play. Several are going to have to sit. So, you know, there's a lot of unknown. There's a lot of question marks around this team from a performance standpoint. So a bowl game, 6 wins would be absolutely unbelievable. I think that's an absolute win, complete turnaround from where it's been. And I think it's possible because, like I said earlier, enthusiasm will win you 1 or 2 games you're not supposed to win. And it'll keep you in games you shouldn't necessarily be in. That was my experience when Butch came on that first year in 07. We obviously didn't make a bowl game, but we were in a lot of games that we probably shouldn't have been in. And it was off of, you know, pure excitement from the players and also, you know, the element of surprise against some of these other teams because they didn't have a lot of film on us. You know, the only film they would have would be the previous couple of games we'd played that year. So in terms of scheming against us, they had nothing to go off of from a game planning standpoint. They're having to watch film of old stops that our coordinators were at, and that's difficult to game plan against. So, you know, I'd say a bowl game is a win. I would temper expectations and say you're probably looking at 4 wins. 4 wins is a win on the season. 5 wins is better, and 6 is a dream.
I do not disagree with any of that, Buck. Your thoughts on what Mike's had to say, and then I want to dig into the new coaching staff aspect of this because I think it's going to be huge this season.
No, Tommy, I was just going to follow up, you know, as we got into it with the prediction, the 6th place prediction, and just add this point, which I think is an important one. Over the last 10 years or so, the difference between the second place team in the ACC Coastal Division and the 6th place team in the ACC Coastal Division has not been great. You know, we're talking about very thin margins. There's a lot of parity in the Coastal Division. Let's say what happens if Virginia's quarterback, Bryce Perkins, gets hurt? How's that going to affect their season? What happens if, Tate Martell at Miami or no other quarterback on their roster can step up and lead that team on offense? What happens if, take your pick, Virginia Tech, what happens if their defense doesn't rebound the way people think that it will rebound? I mean, there's so many unknowns. Injuries play a huge factor, as anybody associated with North Carolina should be well aware, that, injuries can turn a season around quickly, positively and negatively. In 2015, North Carolina had like zero injuries. 2017, 2018, they had an avalanche of injuries. So the margins are so thin in the Coastal Division is that constantly you see teams that were picked first, finish fifth, fourth. You see teams that were picked fourth or fifth win the division. It's the margins in the Coastal Division are very, very thin. So for that reason, that's another reason not to get that upset about where UNC was picked by the ACC media.
I agree with that all. And Mike, you bring up an interesting line there, talking about Butch's first year, and they were 4-8. And I think four or five losses of those were maybe by 7 points or less. Let me take a short break and ask you, Mike, another question that I've been thinking about as the Tar Heels head into their first preseason camp with Mack Brown as the head coach, at least for this batch of Tar Heels.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You've talked about the enthusiasm of a new coaching staff, but put yourself back where you were when you were in college. It's a big deal heading into preseason training camp. Of course, they practice all the time these days, but you're going into training camp. You can do it as a freshman, as a just enrolled in summer class freshman. But also, I think for this team, like it was when Butch Davis came, it's a completely new crowd there, save a couple guys that were retained from the old staff. But talk about the mindset of the players coming into that from a freshman or young guy standpoint, but also from an older guy standpoint when, it's still Carolina football, it still is what it is, but it's also very new given the staff turnover.
So the freshmen, they just don't know any better. So from a staff standpoint, this is all they know. And frankly, the kids who were true freshmen last year that are now going in this year that are either sophomores or redshirt freshmen, they still don't really know. They didn't have a ton of time to really bond with that coaching staff. They're going to spend far more time over the next 4 years with this current staff than they did with the staff that brought them in. So it's still kind of brand new for them too. And we'll get to what that mentality is like, but this is the adjustment to your first training camp is difficult. For me, I mean, I had summer classes in Chapel Hill and I found myself, and I tell people this a lot that I regret doing this so much, but I went home a lot, mainly because I was from Mint Hill. So I was 2.5 hours from Chapel Hill and I could just drive, I could hit 85. 2.5 hours. So I came home most weekends. So I didn't really adjust, you know, Monday to Friday, I was up in Chapel Hill. Saturday, Sunday, I was usually back home in Charlotte. So I never really got the I am away from home feeling until I was in camp and didn't have the option to leave. And I started getting a little homesick. And it's the whole summer is kind of a whirlwind because it's your first time in a college strength and conditioning program. You know, you are in a locker room for the first time with grown, I mean, they're grown men, you know, they're 22-year-old kids, but they are, by any objective standard, walking around on the street, those are grown ass men. And they're more mature, they've seen more stuff, they've done more in their life in that short period that they've had on this earth longer than you. So it's intimidating because you just don't know those guys from an interpersonal relationship standpoint. You know, that's intimidating, just the getting along in the locker room aspect. Learning college football, learning the strength thing to that physically, mentally, emotionally, it's difficult leading into camp. And then you actually get into training camp and you are just completely and totally submerged in it and you can't get away from it. So it can be overwhelming. You know, that's the best word to describe it, is that all of that culminates in an overwhelmed feeling, at least early on in camp. You ultimately adjust to that, but in the very beginning, it's difficult for any freshman. How it is for the older guys with the new staff, I'll tell you this, the ones that are going to play and the ones that are going to be good and are going to contribute to the program in a meaningful way, they're treating this like competition. And it's a, I need to prove myself all over again thing to the new coaching staff that's in there. So, you know, surprisingly, not everybody has that mentality. The ones that are going to be good and the ones that are going to be contributors, they do. And that's how they're treating this. It's a clean slate. It's a fresh start. Some guys have new positions, right? Chaz Surratt, you know, they're looking at this as an opportunity to really put on pads. You know, we had spring ball, sure, but you know, in the heat of the summer, you know, football all day, no distractions, only football. You know, we're watching film all the time. I'm constantly being evaluated. This is a time to really prove yourself, to make your name, and to open up some coaches' eyes. And the good players, the competitors, the ones that are really going to make a difference at some point, they're taking that approach. And the kids who are freshmen last year, who might be redshirt freshmen or sophomores coming into their second camp, they're sort of treating it the same way. It's a do-over of their first year camp. There's no real bad film on them. There's really no bad memories. It's sort of a wash. They got four more years coming up. So this is their first shot at kind of a new beginning. And, you know, that's how they're treating it. So you have the general overwhelmed feeling from the freshmen, and then the, I get a fresh start, need to reprove myself feeling from the older guys. And generally that makes for a very competitive camp.
But you agree with that? I mean, you've been up close covering this stuff. I agree that there's a lot to prove for a lot of these guys. And I can imagine that this camp, especially given everything this program has been to, it's going to be quite spirited, I think, as Mike says.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And to follow up on an earlier point, when Mike was talking about, you know, the games were close, you know, during that 4-8 season under Butch Davis. And you referred to that as well, that they were in a lot of ball games that first year. Here's something that probably not everybody understands or is aware of, but North Carolina was in a lot of close ball games last year with a rash of injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Teams that won four games last year in the FBS, if you won four games, on average, you went into fourth quarter down by 10.3 points. UNC's average deficit headed into the fourth quarter was 3 points. And four win teams lost by an average of 13 points. UNC's average loss was 7. So this team, even though they only won two games, they are not as bad. I'm convinced they are not as bad. And if you look at the numbers and you get into the statistics, this probably was, and Greg Barnes said this to me earlier, Tommy, when we were on a podcast a few weeks ago, that he thought last year headed into the season, UNC was a 6-win team. I think he's probably pretty right. But there was a lot of things that happened last year that is just so unusual and so off the mark in terms of how do bad teams, really bad teams, what do their numbers look like? And UNC's numbers did not look like a 2-win team. So I don't think that this team that Mac inherited is, you know, I don't think he inherited a train wreck. And if anybody's interested, you can, my column is about this today, but you could go to davidmhale.com, who has a article entitled "Mac Didn't Come Back to a Train Wreck." So, you know, give that a read. There's a lot of numbers in there that are, you know, some of them are hard to get your head around, but I just don't think that this team was nearly as bad as their, you know, we talk about they've only won 5 games in the last 2 years. I don't think that was a 2-win team last year. So maybe, you know, there's going to be some guys that, you know, take the attitude that with a little extra effort, with a little bit more into it, and under a different coaching staff that's emphasizing different things, you know, 6 wins is certainly a reasonable number, if not even a little more.
See, Mike and I have tried to set expectations like we did on our podcast a couple of weeks ago with Greg Barnes a little bit lower than they may be, and Buck's raising them up. And I don't disagree with you, Buck, at all about that. But, Mike, how do you flip a losing – I don't want to say it like this because it sounds bad, but I'll say it like I was going to say it initially. How do you flip a losing mentality? 5 wins in 2 years, whether or not they were a 2-win team or not, they won 2 games. So I have no doubt that if the old staff was still there and bad things happened early in the season, it would spiral out of control. But with a new staff, I think things can be different, even if they stumble early. But how do you flip that mentality, Mike? Winning is a mentality. I just don't think you can go from being the beaten to being a great team in a season or two. Now, 2 or 3 seasons out, yeah. Talk to me about that.
It wouldn't be the first time you've seen it. It's happened in sports before. But the quickest way to do it is to start winning and you know, win the first game, beat South Carolina and Charlotte, get some hype behind you and light a fire under your ass. That's, you know, the number one fastest way to turn around losing is to start winning. It's a pretty simple equation. But what that does for you mentally is it shows these guys that they're capable of it, right? And Buck made a very good point that Carolina was in a lot of games, especially last year. They were in a lot of tight games despite a lot of injuries. So you minimize the number of injuries you have. You have guys healthy. And then you experience some success early, and if you connect the dots there, if you're a player and you say, well, when we're healthy, we're pretty good, right? You then expect to stay healthy and you expect to be good, and that starts to that contributes to you focusing a little more, paying a little more attention to details, and then you start you clean up some of the small mistakes that you were making, right? Your attention to detail is a little more focused, and you don't make the same little mistakes and the same little errors that you were making the past couple of years. You missed assignments. You clean up basic fundamentals. You tackle better. You catch the ball cleaner. Small things, basic football stuff. You clean that up, and that will start leading to wins. And when you see the fruit of that labor, right, that will just success will beget more success, but it really begins with, you know, you've had a lot of hype internally. You've had the local media kind of building you up a little bit. Everybody's very excited about Mac. These guys are now seeing the news that season tickets are sold out. So they know the fan base is behind them again. For some of them, the fan base is behind them for the first time. And you want to provide for that, right? You want to keep that excitement going. And the best way to do that is to win. And once you see that sustained excitement lead to early success, and then that early success leads to some sustained success, all of a sudden your losing mentality is transformed into a winning mentality. But it really starts with fixing little things, cleaning up little tiny errors you were making previously, no longer making those small mistakes, and watching that lead to early success. That's how they'll do that.
Tommy, I didn't mean to come across like I was setting expectations off the charts. You know, I mean, I'm just saying that based on, you know, a lot of the numbers that I'm seeing, North Carolina was not as bad of a team as their record last year. What that means for next year, who knows? That's going to be up to next year's team, right? That's going to be up to the new coaches and the players and how much they buy in. And also, it's going to be up to how lucky they are. Are they going to stay healthy? Are they going to catch some breaks? Is the ball going to bounce their way, you know, here and there where it hadn't in the past? Those things remain to be seen. I'm just saying that just based on a lot of the data that you underline data that you look at, the difference between North Carolina's numbers and a really bad team, a team that won two games, they're a lot different. If you think about it, if your average deficit going into the fourth quarter of every ball game is 3 points, you're not getting blown out. You know, there's not a massive difference between wins and losses in terms of, you know, how the game was played out. Things just, two games lost in overtime. That's a part of it. But I encourage people to read that article. It's very interesting, and my column today is about it, so people can look at that as well. But you know, I think that it's not like Mac Brown came into a situation where there was no talent, no hope of winning football games. He was going to have to build, you know, from the ground up, nothing to work with. That's not the case at North Carolina. And if that's the attitude that anybody has taken, then, you know, that's going to be a drag on this year's team. If they feel like, well, we've got no chance, maybe we'll win in 2-3 years down the road, then that's not going to bode well for this year. They've got to believe that they can win. Believe that the coaches are doing their dead level best to put them in a position to win, and go out and play hard. That's all you can ask for.
Indeed. And Mac Brown didn't come back to Carolina to lose a lot of ball games. It's going to be interesting to watch. I mean, the title of this podcast now is going to be Just Win Games. It's going to be by Mike Ingersoll. How do you have a winning mentality? Well, you just win. So appreciate the help with the titling of the show, Mike. Let's wrap this one up a little bit. I got a couple more questions for each of you. Mike, what are you looking for in preseason camp? What's the number one thing that you're going to be looking for? I would think it would be somewhere on that offensive line, maybe see who's going to step up and join Heck as being a top shelf guy.
I'm looking to see who gets hurt. Injuries coming out of training camp are critical, and staying healthy through camp is critical. And when you are amped up the way that, you know, in the ways that I've described so far on this podcast, in terms of the way most guys are going to be treating this camp, you know, fresh start, you know, they're going to be hyper competitive. You can start playing a little out of control and you end up getting hurt, especially in the heat when you're this tired. You know, your technique goes a little bit, but you're still trying to go a million miles an hour. Guys sometimes get hurt, and it's every camp you have it. You have guys get hurt. Some camps more injuries happen than others. But the healthiest, the teams that come out of camp this year, the healthiest are going to be the ones that have the best shot to win a lot of games. the team that wins the national championship, or the two teams that play for the national championship, if you go back and you look at training camp, you know, look at game one of the year, they will have been the teams that came out of camp the healthiest. They will also be extremely talented, right? But they will have come out of camp with minimal injuries. And if they have them, they will have maximized health at key positions. If Carolina is able to do that, regardless of the position group, particularly offensive line, you're right, it does matter. Rolling out into camp with five guys, coming out of camp with the same five, and rolling out into game one with that same group of five guys is going to matter. It's really going to matter come game four or five of the season to build a little cohesiveness. So I don't want to discount that at all, but from a general standpoint, health is what I'm looking for coming out of camp. It's not any sort of development. It's who's going to get hurt and who stays healthy, because that's how Carolina's season's going to go early on. If they're healthy, they've got a shot. And if they're not, it's going to be a tough hill to climb.
Indeed, with the depth issues they have, they've got to stay healthy, especially on the lines on both sides of the ball. Buck, last question of the show. Talk to me a little bit about IC's coverage of preseason camp, training camp, and into the year. New coaching staff, new way of doing things. How will that affect what our Inside Carolina premium subscribers especially can see on the message boards and on the website?
Well, it's going to follow from the spring a bit. And, you know, one thing that Inside Carolina premium subscribers have always looked forward to, and I hope all of those guys have hung on to the end of this podcast, because this is important information for them headed into fall camp, which is this staff's position is that they do not want any media to see team drills. And by team drills, Mike can elaborate on that if he wants to, I mean the offense going against the defense, 11 on 11, and switching back and forth between the first and second team and that sort of thing. Well, under Larry Fedora, there was a period of practice where they had a team drill at the very beginning of practice where they ran through, not at full contact tempo, but they would just run through the first team offense versus first team defense, so on and so forth, just sort of walking through things. And because they did it that way, we were in a position to fill out a depth chart. At the end of every practice, we would put out what we saw as a depth chart. A lot of times, we could not say, for example, that somebody moved up on the depth chart because the guy that normally might fill that spot was on the side line in a red jersey on a bicycle, which we weren't allowed to talk about, so that caused some consternation. But we're not really going to be able to fill out a depth chart when fall camp starts. And you can like that or not like it, but I think the staff's attitude is that they would prefer to keep competition alive and keep everybody believing that, yeah, I've got a chance to play if I work hard. And sometimes players might look at a depth chart, I'm third, or I'm not missing, or I'm not mentioned at all. And then all of a sudden, you've got a morale problem on your hands, and parents calling you, and boosters from their locale calling you. So, I think that what our Inside Carolina subscribers have to get used to is that, when we leave the field, and that's it for the day for our observation period, we're not going to be able to fill out a depth chart for you. A lot of times that sort of thing, some of that is you can guess yourself. I mean, Charlie Heck is going to start. Let's just get that out of the way. But the further you go down and across the depth chart, we're not going to be able to fill in those blanks. And I think that's the way the staff wants it. Just a tidbit for those who are used to our practice scoops. and what we normally put out, that depth chart info is going to be pretty thin this year, at least until the South Carolina game. So just something to bear in mind for people that follow our practice scoop coverage religiously, and there's a lot that do. So I wanted to throw that in. I hope people listen to the end so they got that info. But we'll follow up and make sure everybody else knows as well.
Yeah, the ones that listening, the ones that care about the depth chart on the practice scoops are still listening. So it'll be an interesting cover for Greg Barnes and Buck and Ross and everybody else covering Carolina football for Inside Carolina and the rest of the area media heading into preseason camp, fall camp, season in just over a month. Mike and Buck, I always enjoy talking to you guys. We need to do it more often. Buck, I'll see you in person soon. Mike, I hope I see you in person either in Charlotte at South Carolina or in Chapel Hill at Miami. But appreciate you guys joining the show.
Thanks, Tommy. Enjoyed it, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.